Pastors need to be convinced that their listeners are a better judge of the effectiveness of their sermons than they are. That's the key sentence for our SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. We welcome you today. We're talking with Dr. David Maines, the executive director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. If I may, David, let me read a sentence and then you tell me who it is I'm quoting. Pastors need to be convinced that their listeners are a better judge of the effectiveness of their sermons than they are.
I know the answer to that. You're quoting me as something I say all the time. So am I right?
Indeed, I'm quoting you. Indeed, I am.
Okay, so pastors need to be convinced that their listeners are a better judge of, and the key to that is the effectiveness of their sermons than they are. I don't think that listeners are better judges of how good a sermon this is. You know, listeners are very hesitant to even think in those terms. But when you talk about the effectiveness of the sermon, the man or woman listening, or high schooler or even child listening, is going to be able to say, that affected me this way, and I know more about that than you know, because you don't know what's going on inside of me. So that's a very major thing, that they are better judges of the effectiveness of what was said. If that's true, which I believe it is, and I've written on that topic many, many times, then the question is, why is it that ministers don't ask people more often, what is the effectiveness of my sermon in terms of your life? You know, they're not getting the answer to that all that much. In fact, when you ask pastors, you know, do you think that was an effective sermon? Well, I hope so. I really don't know. Do people in your congregation ever talk to you about the effectiveness of your sermons? No. Well, they're not going to initiate that. Do you ever ask them, how effective was this sermon in terms of your life? No, I don't usually ask that. In fact, the truth is they almost never do. So somehow you have to establish a relationship that will be such that they will be open and that they won't tell you what they think you want to hear, but they will say, this is how that sermon affected my life. And then I think you're talking about really being able to judge how well you're doing as a communicator on behalf of Jesus, your Lord and Master.
Actually, there's another sentence that correlates with that earlier one, and here it is. Parishioners are better than their ministers at knowing what their spiritual needs are.
Yeah, I'm evaluating what I said, whether that's good or not. It's so obvious that that's true, isn't it? You know, I know more of what my spiritual needs are than you know. So if you're going to preach a sermon to me, I won't tell you anything. But if you're going to preach 52 sermons to me, at a certain point, I'm going to say, you know what, you've been scratching in a lot of places that aren't itching in terms of my life. Would you like to know where I itch? And at that point, if you say no, then I'm going to say something's wrong with you, you know, because that means I got to go through another 52 sermons next year and you still don't know where I'm itching. You know, that's just a part of communication. Am I resolving any problems you have by what I'm saying? If the answer is no, sooner or later, you just, after a while, you say, well, I just shut out listening to you, or otherwise I go somewhere else. I don't know why ministers don't go more to their people and say, tell me what your spiritual needs are. Because from my experience, I find people very open to that. In fact, I think talking to people before you preach a sermon as to what you're going to talk about, you know even before you preach it whether or not it's going to be effective if you communicated with your listeners. I'm going to talk about, I'm picking a topic, something we talked about not that long ago. I'm going to talk to you about memorizing scripture. Is that going to meet your need? You know, that's going to be far out for a lot of people. So if I just say this is a sermon about scripture memory and the great advantages to it, I probably lost you within 5 minutes unless somehow I'm scratching a need, so I have to come back to a different approach to that. So I may say, tell me what your spiritual needs are, and then I will be able to find some scriptures that relate to that. At that point, I'm getting closer to where people are. But I need to know specifically what those problems are. Now, if you go into the average congregation, in my mind, you're talking about problems that are very different from problems the average minister has. Because the average minister lives a life very different from where the average parishioner is. You know, the average minister doesn't hear nearly the amount of profanity that the average person in the congregation hears. The average person in the congregation is going to hear way more gossip, way more dirty talk than the average minister is going to hear. They're going to live in a world that's much more dog-eat-dog than the minister's world. The good thing about clergy is that we're in a place where we're seeing the best of people for the most part. It may be they come to us with problems, but they still are people who want to see the problem solved. We are removed in many ways from just the underbelly of the world, if you please. With the immense problems of greed in the world, the immense elevation of the dollar as far as what people are living for, all that, we live in kind of an unreal world. So the question is, how do I get out? Am I tracking with you, Dean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do I get out of this unreal world into the world where people are? And then how do I relate what I'm saying on Sunday to where they are, as opposed to ending up preaching sermons to myself and where I am? That's where I found that I was out of touch when I began to talk to people, that they were saying, the things you're talking about are so beyond the things that I deal with every day, that it's almost like I'm listening to, you know, His Holiness speak or something. You're in a different world. The more I could say, well, tell me about your world, and the more I heard, you know, how different our routines were in every way, how much I was in scripture compared to where most people were. Just a daily job consumes people, and the pressures of that job consumes people. You know, how when a person has reached retirement, they feel like they don't have worth anymore. I never felt those needs as I was a younger minister until I heard people talk about these things. So somehow communicating. Unfortunately, ministers don't have a way that's set up with people to the place where they just say, tell me about your world more. I want to know what's going on. I feel like I'm in a different place than you are. So I need to somehow have your help in forming what I'm talking about. So, yeah, so those are the things. And then the question is, how do you counteract all of that? How do you take what they're saying and apply it to your life? And usually what happens with ministers is that you find they're dealing with things that you dealt with before you went into professional ministry, and you've overcome a lot of those things. You know, it's very easy as a minister, say, to be free about your faith because people know you're a clergyman, and they may even approach you with problems related to the faith. They don't do that if you're the foreman on the line that's, you know, manufacturing tin cans or whatever. You're just another Joe there. So how do you bridge that gap? So how do you become natural in your witnessing? A lot of the ways that a minister says it's natural are not natural for the person who's in the 9-to-5 job, and they just don't work. So the only way you find whether they do work is by talking. And it's very, very hard for ministers to go through those conversations because you realize, I'm in a different world. I don't know that I can even relate to your world anymore. So help me anyway.
As I've been listening to you, one of the things that occurred to me, David, is that when a pastor approaches a member of the congregation to find out what their spiritual needs are, it might be helpful to not necessarily use that phrase as a framework for the discussion. By that, I mean, maybe the pastor should just ask what's going on in the person's life, what's going on at work, what's going on at home. That would tend to open up the discussion that would eventually get to what spiritual needs might be, as opposed to saying to someone, what are your spiritual needs, when that person is likely not even thinking in those terms.
Yeah, I got to the place where I would have groups come to the house regularly, and they were aware that I was going to say, tell me where you are spiritually, what would you have me preach, that kind of thing. So your comments are more on a out-of-the-blue, unexpected thing. Although I do like what you say, and if I push it further, I think it would be a huge help to ministers, and I tried to do this in my own pastoral ministry, to visit where people work every day, to go spend just an hour watching at the back of the classroom where the person who has a third grade class teaches and get some of the incredible things that go on, the patience that is needed, you know, trying to work with students who are all at different places in terms of their learning process, to be able to go with a guy who is a painter and is in different houses every day and the monotony of what he's doing, to, you know, just go to where people are and then try to say, how are they hearing what I'm preaching on a Sunday? And then to get them to talk that way. In fact, once you go to their place of employment, not everybody will allow you to do that, but a lot of places you can. And you just say, tell me what's good about the job, what's not good about the job. And so you're getting a feel for where people are. And you get in the habit of asking the kind of questions that give you the resources that you need to be a good pastor on behalf of these given individuals. It's even possible that somebody has been unemployed. It's very common now, employed for a period of a year and a half, 2 years, 5 years, and say, tell me what your day is like. What do you do during the day? How do you counteract just the frustration of not being a person who you sense as being productive in our society. Just getting in the mindset of those people. It's more than questions. It's purposely trying to get in the other guy's shoes.
Once a pastor gets a sense of where his or her people are, what does the pastor do with that information?
Well, it depends on the information. I don't find that very hard at all. I think that it's so pointed that you have a feeling of what the temptations are. You know, you tend to think, if nobody tells you, if you're a young pastor, you think the biggest problem in the church is lust, because where you are at your age, that's what you're dealing with. And all of a sudden you realize there are a lot of other problems, problems you never thought about because you're not old enough or because you're a different personality, whatever. So it just broadens you in terms of your understanding of people. When I went into the city and worked there, I found that one of the huge problems I never confronted before was people trying to figure out what to do with their day because they didn't have work. They were on welfare, you know. Financial problems were a huge difficulty for them. I found that I haven't had a problem with lying. I don't think I'm somebody, I'm very careful what I say. Lying is not a huge problem to me because I've been programmed not to tell lies. But a lot of people, lying is a way of life for them. So I would tend not to, if I were doing a series on problems of the tongue, I would probably think, well, people don't have a problem with lying. But as you talk to the people, you realize that a lot of individuals, especially brand new Christians, this is a huge difficulty for them because they've had a pattern of lying from the time they were 4 or 5 years old. So you wouldn't know that if you didn't talk to people. One of the things that I'm talking about, just to wrap up where the program is to say, if you are working on a sermon this week and you have not consulted anyone, this would be a good week to try to put into practice what we're talking about. And you say to somebody on the phone, you could do it by email, depending on where you are in the week, I'll give you a day to get back to me. Here's what I'm thinking of preaching this week. This is where I'm headed in it. Give me your feedback. Is this scratching where you itch at all? You know, so that kind of a fast communication. If a person gets an email and calls you on the phone and says, tell me a little bit more, that's great. It opens up the conversation quickly. You just got some kind of input from people who are living in a world that's not your world. It's different preparing a message for a group of ministers than it is for a group of people who aren't ministry oriented as far as their training, you know. So the more you're able to match what you're saying to the needs of those people, that's where I'm pushing, because I think ministers don't realize how different their normal day is compared to the average individual listening to them. And because of that great gulf, it's good to open up that communication and begin to speak directly to the needs of your people. Okay? I've pushed it long enough. I think I got my point across.
Indeed. What we're saying is pastors need to be convinced that their listeners are a better judge of the effectiveness of their sermons than they are. We're so glad you joined us for a SermonCoach.com podcast today. You found our podcast on our website, SermonCoach.com. That's sermon-coach.com. We have resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons, and we invite you to browse through the rest of our website. We also invite you to join us for our next SermonCoach.com podcast.